You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, 88.1 in Ithaca and 91.9 in Watkins Glen. And this is the Made of Clay Report. And our guest on this hour is Liz Warner. Liz, it's good to have you here this morning.
Hi, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Good. So we start this. This is my effort to help us get to know each other across our many life paths. And we are a community of people migrating in and out and people migrating and settling. And so just the question is, who are you? And you can take that in any label or quality or history or story way that you want. And we'll go over it actually in many ways over the course of the hour. But what's a good place to start? What do we need to start the conversation?
Who am I? well, I'm a 32-year-old woman. I am a wife and mother of two kids, 3 and 1 years old. I am originally from Western Massachusetts. For the most part, we moved around a bit, but that was where I spent the bulk of my growing up. And then I came here to go to Cornell and never left. So here I am still. I graduated in 2005. So I've now lived here longer, I think, than I've lived anywhere in my life in one place. So this really feels like home more to me now. I mean, the Berkshires are always like nostalgic to me, but and my parents still live there. But yeah, I love this area, and my husband is from around here. So what else? I work at Habitat for Humanity of Tompkins and Cortland counties, pretty part-time right now since I had kids. So, you know, it's kind of a nice balance. I'm home some with my kids, but I also have a part-time job. And I just came from working at the Human Services Coalition, where I met you in one capacity. And what else? So yeah, okay.
That gets us started, and we can learn more about some of your passions, about your parenting, your work, your relationships, and what you've learned along the way, which is kind of how we're how we roll here.
Cool.
you brought some music, and we're going to start with Paul Simon's "The Obvious Child." Is there a reason that you picked this song among the six that you brought today, or five?
Yeah. Well, it's just one of my favorite songs ever. You know, it's just one of those songs that throughout different trends of what I've liked at different times has stayed pretty constant, and maybe one of the best songs, I think, ever. So and I always think of that one first.
And this is a song I was not familiar, but you are the second or third guest to bring this and say almost the same thing about it. Yeah. So I to me, it's been a good one to learn.
I've been following the light across my room. I watch the night receive the moon of my day. Some people say the sky is just the sky, but I say, why deny the obvious job? Why deny the obvious job? He sits by his window and thinks to himself, how it's strange that some rooms are like cages. Sonny's yearbook from high school is down from the shelf, and he idly thumbs through the pages. Some have died, some have fled from themselves, or struggled from here to get there. Sonny wanders beyond his interior walls, runs his hands through his thinning brown hair. Well, I'm accustomed to a smoother act, or maybe I'm a dog who's lost its bite. I don't expect to be treated like a fool no more. I don't expect to sleep the night. Some people say a lie is just a lie, but I say the cross is in the ballpark. Why deny the obvious, child?
Was Paul Simon and The Obvious Child, and our guest on this hour of the Made of Clay Report is Liz Warner. So Liz, what experience or experiences have helped to really shape who you are or what you what you value?
Well, what experiences? I mean, probably the biggie is becoming a mother. I think that's probably done a number to my life in many ways.
Right. And so I'd like to back into that experience. So, so before that, what had you thought about life, and what had shaped your sense of your direction and your commitments, how you chose work or chose to spend your volunteer time or chose to spend time with your partner?
Well, I mean, I would say I was a more like controlling, trying to, you know, control my environment a lot, which, I mean, that's a big part of my personality, and I don't think it's ever really going anywhere, but I think I've chilled out a lot since having kids.
Did you learn that because that was modeled for you, or because you felt the need? Was that an attitude about control that you came with, from birth? I mean, I see kids kind of arrive from birth like that. Some kids kind of figure that out because they need that, because things are chaotic, or they see it modeled by somebody else.
Yeah. I mean, maybe I thought I was creating order out of chaos. I mean, my upbringing wasn't, like, terribly chaotic, but, you know, there were four kids, and we weren't all, you know, really clustered close in age, but I was always trying to, like, make my household and, like, life more orderly, you know, even as a really little kid. So I probably, maybe a little bit of both, I don't know, which is, you know, probably the way of it with most kids. What you came with, partly what's modeled.
And but they say that the first child you can maintain the illusion of control, and with the second child you know, that's severely challenged. And if there's a third child, it's just gone to the wind.
The children are now taking over. It's like Lord of the Flies over here.
Right.
Yeah.
So how have you had to change as a mom? How has motherhood changed you in ways that you would not have guessed?
Turned me into my mother. You know, I've become a parent. You know, and sometimes I watch myself from the outside and I'm kind of like, that looked like my parents or, you know, something. So,
And does that feel, I mean, sometimes that feels like, oh no, I said I would never do that. And other times that feels
some
like,
of that.
I'm, you know, I really understand now why they did that because I never really got it. Or I'm, you know, wow, I can do that too.
Yeah,
it's a whole array of experiences.
Yeah, it's interesting. But yeah, I've just kind of, I don't know, taken a step back, I think, in a lot of things and just said, you know, you have to roll with this right now while they're really little and it's not going to be forever. But, you know, but I think it's also been helpful because it's like helped me just put things more in perspective. And it's like, okay, this is what's important right now. This is what can kind of go to the side.
And so specifically, what kinds of things have you had to kind of let go of to see that you could still be all right?
Like, I'm kind of a little bit of a clean freak, you know? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I don't know, not like super duper extreme, but I would always want to do these like big clean outs, like thinking about the New Year's time, you know, has brought it up because it's like I used to love to do this big New Year's clean out and like I love getting rid of extra clutter and, you know, just deep cleaning the whole place. And, you know, it's like this big ritual thing, but it's just logistically impossible with a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old under my feet. So, you know, at first it was like really like make me twitch, you know, and I'd be like, you know, maybe my mom can like take my daughter for the weekend and I can still do a big clean out, you know, but it's just gotten to the point where I'm like, okay, I'm going to keep my house like decently clean. So it's, you know, up to par, but if you don't get the Tupperware organized for the next year and a half,
or if the lids don't always match, you know.
Yep. I'll get there. So I've learned to be more piecemeal about things instead of just having to be like really, just black and white about a lot of things in general. Probably in my life, it's made me be more like middle of the road and like, okay, everybody needs, you know, I don't know.
I mean, and I guess, this is a common theme in today, the black and white or how do you, the middle of the road.
Yeah.
And you become more nuanced in a way that you didn't have to before. And you become more skillful in seeing what matters. I think that's part of what I'm hearing. What qualities as a person has being a mother pulled out of you or into your awareness that you're proud of that you didn't really realize you had?
Well, I think work ethic might be one, because I do feel like it's just, it's such a nonstop job.
You know,
it is nonstop and I really don't sit down on the job, I guess. Which probably maybe I should a little bit more. I'm gonna, you know, have arthritis by the time I'm 35, but you know,
right? Or you sit with your children,
and
you learn how to kind of structure that time.
But to kind of like juggle my job and my household and, you know, the dog, the 2 kids, my husband, who's, you know, the type that's like opens the fridge and stares at it and is like, where's the milk? And it's, I mean, I don't want to paint him like Homer Simpson, but I hope he's not listening right now, honey. Are you listening?
You're going to have a little fun with that. Just
keeping it all juggling and not like losing your mind or just completely letting something like go to the wayside. Is tough. Some days it can be tough to hold it together, but yeah, I think I just keep my nose to the grindstone, so to speak. Right. So yeah, I think that's been a positive thing to see. Some things I don't like so much that I see, but
right. Well, and what kind of buttons do they push in you?
Oh, everyone.
Yeah.
My daughter especially. And I think what, and I feel like a lot of parents say this sometimes, but the things that are hardest to see are the ones where you're like, that is me. Like, yep. That is
She's
so
She's giving
me.
It back to me.
And yes, and now I see what it must have been like for my mother.
Yeah.
Yeah, she would laugh if she heard this too, but yeah. So those times, and you're kind of like, that's what really, burns.
Right.
You're like, oh, right.
Yeah. And, you know, I think when we seek to be, when we have kind of a strong black and white or perfectionistic strain,
mm-hmm.
It is humbling.
Mm-hmm.
And it can, and humble, I mean, humility is not far from humiliation.
Yeah.
Sometimes, and that's a tough razor's edge to kind of
mm-hmm.
navigate,
yeah.
and to be on the humility side rather than the humiliated side.
Yeah,
but they feel very similar.
Yeah,
at times.
Yeah, that's true.
and well, what actually, let's cut to music. And do you want
sure.
to go to the Zydeco piece or the Bonnie
yeah.
Raitt? Or
sure, let's yeah. I feel like they're kind of in chronological order for me.
Okay, okay. Do you want to say anything about the Do You Like Good Music?
So I saw Keith Frank at Grassroots, like probably a lot of people in this area have. And it's just such happy, great music. And this song always reminds me of me and my husband when we first got together and we went and saw Keith Frank together. And I think that's when that whole like weekend, we were just like, man, just like fell so in love, which is so cheesy. But
no, but were you in college or was this after college?
This was after college. Uh-huh. Yeah. So yeah, I met him after college. So anyway, we just both still love going to see Keith Frank every year and just like feeling nostalgic about it. And we love, and Zydeco is just such happy, great music. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a great way to renew the connection that got you together.
Yeah.
Thank you. and that was Do You Like Good Music with Frank, Keith Frank and the Solo. How do you pronounce it? Zydeco Band.
Oh, gosh. That looks like a hard one, but So you?
Yeah. So you? Anyway, that pronunciation, I'm terrible.
It's French.
Yes. So our guest on this Hour of the Made of Clay Report is Liz Warner. So Liz, what you had said that was what was playing when you met and fell in love with your husband.
Yeah, your well, early husband. On.
Early
yeah.
on. Mm-hmm. Early on. That's kind of the soundtrack of that part of your life. Mm-hmm. But before that, what prompted you? I mean, back when I graduated from Cornell in 81, mm-hmm. and prior to that, lots of people stayed. It was, you know.
Yeah, I don't think they do as much anymore.
They don't do as much anymore. And yeah. It's harder. Housing's harder. Entry-level jobs that you want are harder. People aren't taking time off quite as much after college.
Right. Yeah.
Or they're going back home and living with mom and dad. But then, mm-hmm. But what prompted you to stay in Ithaca when you finished Cornell?
Well, actually, I was offered a job, which I was a sociology major, so.
So you were grateful to be offered anything.
Let's just put it this way. My mom, when I declared, my mom said, have fun cleaning toilets. No, but it actually, you know, ironically, in Ithaca, there's plenty of work for a sociology major.
Right.
So... Yeah, it probably just made a lot of sense. Although at the time when I was graduating from college and was like 21, I didn't think I was going to stay in Ithaca either, you know, and I just got in my mind that I was leaving. But I was an intern at the Human Services Coalition, and I had been for like a year, and they were about to start up this new program. When I was like right when I was about to graduate. And so the director of the health plan, this was for the Health Planning Council, asked me if I would want to stay. Seems like I had the right kind of background to maybe left from college to like start up this program. And it's funny because in hindsight, I don't know why it was such a hard decision. Because I had no other prospects that I was going to. You know, I was going to move back in with my parents. But first, I'd have to sublet my apartment that I had a year lease on because I was graduating in December. But it was like, yeah, I'll just sublet. And I'm going to move back in with my parents. And I'm just going to, like, waitress or do whatever I can find to save up some money until I can go on a big cross-country trip. And so then I just... Like, I'm a planner, you know, I'm a planner. So I was planning on this. And so then my mind was made up and that was just where I was going. And then, you know, when I was offered this job to do something like career interesting, you know, mm-hmm. sort of for a brand new graduate, you know, I wasn't just going to like file right. paperwork or whatever, or be a waitress. Yeah. It was like, hey, I'm going to start this program and like what appropriate experience from, you know, what I just studied and everything. And it was very interesting. And it was cool to be building something from the ground up and be part of it and then learn its different quirks and, mm-hmm. you know, make it better and, everything. But,
what was the program?
It was called Urgent RX, and it was started to provide people who had no health insurance get medication, even if they, you know, didn't have the money for a copay or, you know, whatever, just
made
to help
sure
them
that
get
they
it.
Got medication
yeah,
that they're
right,
that
right,
they're
right.
that they're
so they could finish their course of treatment, yeah, right.
So that their income would not or their assets would not make sure that. They could still get treatment.
Right. Yeah. So anyway, do that and just stay in Ithaca. I already had the lease, right? So, So I was like, I wrestled with it, but ultimately I was like, yeah, okay, I think I'm going to stay. It wasn't very much money, but I was like, I can do some babysitting on the side or whatever, you know, and I did. And then... It turned out that one of my side babysitting people had this big house out in Slaterville, and they were like Cornell affiliated. So they left every break and they were gone for the whole summer. And they asked me, would I house sit would I like stay at their house during the summer? Nothing to really take care of. They took their dogs and, you know, blah, blah, blah. But just like, we want somebody to be there.
Right.
So that was the summer after I took the job in January. And so I took the job and I told Betty that I had this plan. This was the health planning council director. And she was like, well, that's fine. She's like, just help us start it up. And then you can go on your trip. And you can go. And if you want to move on from there, that's fine. And I was like, okay, great. Like, you're being really cool about that. So sure, I'll do it. And I did it. And it was great. And then I got offered this house sitting thing when, like, right as my lease was ending. Sort of just like, whatever, things fell into place. So I was going to leave in June for the trip, but then I left in August because I said, sure, I'll live there for free in this huge house for the summer. And it was a blast. Yeah. And this was right after college. And then saved up some money. And then me and two friends drove cross country. And then I came back to the Human Services Coalition because they were like, you know, if you want to not leave forever and you just want to like go do this trip and then come back, that's cool. And I was like, sure, because the, you know, person in me that really wanted like security, you know, because just right. upping and going on a trip is like not totally like me, but it was a good time to do it, I guess. So anyway, I was like, that would be really great, actually, if I could go and do this trip and then like know that I had a job to come back to. And this sort of had become like home to me a little more. So anyway, I met my husband and, you know.
But I just want to, I mean, it's
that's
it's,
what kept me.
Right. And it seems like the housing fell into place. Mm-hmm. The trip fell into place. The work yeah. fell into place.
Yeah.
And you describe yourself as a little bit of a control freak, I think was the term yeah. you used. Not just my interpretation of what you actually said.
I hate admitting it, but it's true.
But all of those things that were largely out of your control happened for you.
Yeah.
And it's funny how life oftentimes has laid those things there that we don't necessarily notice
yeah.
at the time that are out of our character.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, it certainly didn't feel like everything was falling into place at the time. No. Everything felt so chaotic all the time. But right. looking back at it, it's like, yeah, it kind of just this happened and then this happened. And
that's kind of having time and wisdom mm-hmm. to look back, but also wisdom then is the ability to look forward with the same kind of grace.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What did you? So how long did you stay with the health planning count or with the Human Services Coalition?
So I ultimately ended up staying there like 5 years, and then it got boring, and I really, affordable housing is kind of like my big
Your passion,
passion uh-huh. as far as like professional and just issues, I guess. But I always knew that. I knew that before I took the job, but this was a good experience, and it was really eye-opening to learn about the healthcare system.
Right, and before it got boring, what did you learn that you really didn't know beforehand?
How screwed up it is, and like so deeply, so deeply screwed up.
How so?
I just, yeah. It's. I think it's doing a lot more impact than people realize. Like just having all the disparity in healthcare. I think it's causing a lot of pretty deep-rooted problems, but and the expense of it obviously has just gotten really insanely out of control. So it's either going to put people in crippling debt and just keep them down.
even with the Affordable Care Act, it was, you know, efforts.
Well, the Affordable Care Act is helping, I think, but it still hasn't slowed as far as I can tell. But you know, I'm certainly no political analyst, yeah. but you know. Definitely, the number of uninsured that there were was such a huge problem that something had to be done. So,
yeah.
Anyway. But yeah, so it was really interesting. And just to know that part of the human service, you know, world a little better was really informative, I think, you know, to learn about what's available as far as health mm-hmm. insurance and healthcare programs and what's not available mm-hmm. and et cetera, et cetera. So, but it's not really my issue that I really right. like have yeah. a place in my heart for. So
let me do the station ID and we'll come back to
sure.
the issue.
Yeah, yeah,
you're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. And our guest on this hour is Liz Warner. So Liz, the issue that you care about is affordable housing. Mm-hmm. And how did you segue back into the issue? How did you get to the issue that you care about?
Well, I jumped out of the Human Services Coalition to take a job at Better Housing for Tompkins County. And I worked there with mostly with the home ownership program. Mm-hmm. So, and I had actually before that, while I was just working at the Human Services Coalition, doing the health planning stuff, I started volunteering with Habitat for Humanity of Tompkins and Cortland counties, which is where I work now. And I volunteered, but it was, you know, super small, like one staff person, really, really small time operation. I never thought I'd be able to work for an affiliate this small, and just sort of resigned myself to that and went into Better Housing. And then I ended up leaving. This is the only time I actually have left the area. I left for like 7 months and went back to my hometown in Massachusetts. And then I came back, and I contacted the director of Habitat, who was, you know, kind of a friend. I mean, we graduated from Cornell about the same time and had worked together a while as, you know, in a volunteer capacity. And I was like, you know, I'd love a job with Habitat. And I know that we're, you know, you guys are probably too small, but maybe there's a way to like share a position between a couple of really small rural affiliates that don't have much staff, and it could be based out of the Habitat New York State office or something. And I contacted the state director, whom I knew as well, and floated the idea. And it was really interesting because, and made me feel so good because while I'd been home in Massachusetts, I was like, I'm gonna move to a bigger city. I'm gonna get myself this great job in like New York or Boston. And I was job hunting for like 7 months straight. And just getting nowhere.
Right. And what year was that?
Well, it was, what year was it? I think it was like 2011. It was 2011. Okay, yeah. So it was a rough time. Yeah. And it was like November. Nobody, you know, not a lot going on in like the holidays time. Anyway, I was just getting nowhere. And then I was like, I decided I was going to move back to Ithaca because my husband, I was still with, you know, my now husband, but we were just like long distance at that time. And anyway, we got, you know, I got pregnant and I moved back to Ithaca. And so I was like, well, what am I going to do for a job? And I reached out to Shannon at Habitat and Judy at Habitat New York State. And they both responded and were like, we'll hire you.
Wow.
And I was like, so after that, just nothing. I was like, you know what? Ithaca wants me back. Ithaca loves me. It's the only place I feel this much love from, you know, in all always. So it was interesting.
The universe conspires. Yeah,
the universe conspired. And I tell kids that are, you know, at IC or Cornell now, you know, where I meet through work or something, I'm like, just watch out because it can be a black hole. But I think, as you said, it doesn't happen. I feel like there was a time when it probably happened more because there's certainly no shortage of like transient people,
as you're
saying in Ithaca, and it still draws a lot of people to stay that aren't from here. But I don't think it's all Cornell anymore anyway. But
and there were times when the economy here, I mean, in 1978, we lost most of our manufacturing jobs. Now we've grown most of them back since then. Mm. But at that point, manufacturing jobs outnumbered higher education jobs in Tompkins County. And most people locally don't realize that manufacturing was so huge until so late. Because between World War II and 1978, the two were kind of, they were both anchors for the economy. But then manufacturing collapsed, and then there was huge hiring at Cornell in the 1980s for all of the supplemental programs and the research things and administrative staff, and that's when those
kind
support
of,
staff
they became
things.
The employer.
They doubled their employment. Not quite doubled, but they dramatically increased their employment in a relatively short period of time. But
interesting.
And that's also when we began to see massive in commuting from outside outside the county, because people, there were jobs that were just drying up all over, and we became the place of employment. And a lot of the people who stayed on had the ability to survive doing artsy kinds of things, or had money behind them that allowed them to buy in and cut their costs and start businesses or whatever. So you know, it's a much more difficult economy to work now, because we are the engine of economic development in this region. And that's you know, that makes it hard for people to just hang out here.
That's very that
wasn't,
true.
It wasn't so hard back 40 years ago.
That must have been a really cool time to live here.
Cool in some ways. The buildings were awfully run down, and fire traps. I lived in one that, that I said, there's going to be a fire here. And, you know, I moved out of that building, and then 2 years later the top floor of it had burned because there were so many code violations. This was back in, you know, there were issues, but with gentrification oftentimes comes a higher standard of care. And I guess this is all kind of by way of wandering back into Habitat for Humanity and affordable housing. You know, Habitat has a pretty unique philosophy about how to provide housing, and and it produces a very small amount of housing, but it does it in a particular way. So, do you want to explain that, or could you describe that, or how that relates to your passion?
So it's it's a home ownership program. That's actually something a lot of people don't know, I think, and is a common myth, is that a lot of people have this vision of Habitat just building houses and giving them away for free. But it's a home ownership program, much like many other first-time home ownership assistance programs.
And what they're giving away is the unpaid labor of the volunteers, to some extent.
Right.
And they're paying for the materials, they're paying for the house, they're taking out a mortgage, but it's one they can afford, if I understand correctly.
Right. Well, it's not real cut and dried as far as, like, you know, all the labor is donated and all
no,
the
no,
materials.
No, because you have to hire plumbers.
But there's
every
build is different. But essentially the family, Habitat's unique in that the family does sweat equity, so they actually build alongside the volunteers. And it's also, it's faith-based. And you do help just like one, well, small affiliates like ours help like one or two families a year.
Right.
But it's such a close partnership, unlike a lot of other, it's not like, okay, you go to this office, you make an application for the program, like if you do everything you're supposed to do, you get handed a check. It's really much more of a close relationship, and teaching them about what it's going to be like to be a homeowner, and kind of guiding them and helping them save money, and, you know, this is how it's going to be different to be a homeowner than be a renter, and just get them ready for that big jump into home ownership. So,
and in many cases, this is the first in many generations who will have owned their own home.
Yeah, probably in a lot of cases.
How many people do you, I know there's a vetting committee for people who want access to this kind of housing. How many people do you have to turn away for people that you are able to accept and also build housing? I imagine you could accept a lot more than you can actually build for.
Right. Yeah. So it's a matter of picking like one partner family. Every time there's a build, you know, there was a time when we did a more ongoing application process, but it didn't make much sense because we cover two counties, and if we're building a house in like Trumansburg, you know, probably not a lot of people in, you know, the city of Cortland are interested in that house, and vice versa. So it didn't make a lot of sense to just have people applying from all over two counties all the time, because all that information, income information and stuff, gets outdated, and then they would really just have to apply all over again once there's a build in an area that we are going to be, that they're interested in being in. So, I think also people would think we get a lot more applications than we do. It's very difficult to find partner families. I don't think anybody realizes that. But partly because, we do, I don't know the numbers really, but I do turn a lot of people away. So I'm the family services coordinator, so I do like
that's
all
part
that.
Of your job.
Yeah. That's what I started doing when I was volunteering, is I joined the family selection committee, mm-hmm. that committee that used to just look at all the applications. So now it's done by a staff person, me primarily, and we still have a family selection committee, but they do the home visit part and like get to know the family and they, yeah, that's, and they, you know, are evaluating the housing when they go there, but they don't really look at like the financial information as much anymore. That's become my job.
What makes it so hard to find a family?
Well,
that's eligible and suitable for partnering.
Well, the reason is the various eligibility guidelines make it so that we're targeting a very narrow slice of the population, I think.
And how would you describe that slice?
Well, like, is probably between $25,000 a year household annual gross income, and I mean, talking just numbers wise, mm-hmm. you know, upper limit maybe 35-40. I mean, the upper limit is going to depend on your household size because everything is based off of area median income. Right. So we're supposed to serve 30-60% of the area median income at Habitat. You know, it's very difficult to find somebody that qualifies in all the other ways and yet still makes under 60% of the area median income. Like, for example,
what
credit.
Are the, yeah. Okay. Yes.
You know, first you're going to look at, okay, can the what's the income look like? Can it sustain a housing payment? And then you look at the credit, and people with lower incomes and great credit scores, like credit histories, yeah. do not go hand in hand. Right. It just, that's the way it is,
right.
In this country. So that probably screens out a good half or more of people that we look at, unfortunately. So they have to really fall in fairly narrow income guidelines because the bottom limit, we can't really go down to 30%.
Right. I was going to say 30% would be around $17,000 to $20,000, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Like low, you know, and it, again, it's different for each household size and it's different in the two counties. But if somebody is at 30% AMI, they are not going to be able to afford the tax and insurance escrow in these two counties.
Let alone a mortgage payment. Yeah, yeah.
Nothing.
Yeah,
we'd have to give that. We would have to give the houses away for nothing.
Right.
So affordable housing is really tough to accomplish, as probably a lot of people know, but it is. So but
you're trying to give people who have lived a relatively issue-free life a shot at owning their own house when their track record wouldn't normally allow them to do it.
Right.
Most people who have the skills to live that kind of life mm-hmm. have higher income levels.
Right.
And that's so that's partly why you're so
narrow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like we're looking for this family that has just this narrow slice of income, you know, has managed to keep their credit clean or has rehabilitated it and like enough time has gone by and, you know, is going to be a good, willing partner. So it's hard.
And there's a beauty to helping people make that step.
Right.
When you can help people make that step, it's a step they couldn't make alone.
Right.
And so there's a real value to it. But the enormity of our housing problem, that's a small, but without disparaging it, it is a wonderful thing for those who qualify.
Yeah.
And it is and it is an indictment of the larger system that so many people fall through or don't have access to affordable housing that they can in part own.
Yeah.
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 What would you like to go to next musically? Because we have time for two more songs, and we've got three more on your list here.
Okay. You know, why don't we do 3 and 5? We'll do 3 right now. Okay, and then 5 right
so
down
Bonnie
the line.
Raitt, right down the line.
As long
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca. This is the Made of Clay Report. And our guest on this hour has been Liz Warner. Liz, how has your life, the experience of kind of being, living that you've gone through in these 32 years, I guess you would say, mm-hmm. How have you been kind of forced to reassess or to change in ways that you wouldn't have chosen and yet how have you learned from things you would not have chosen to learn?
Well, I guess kind of like I was saying earlier, being more sort of middle of the road, I guess, because I'm the type of person that I think comes into the world wanting to be really black and white, mm-hmm. because I'm so, that's more orderly for me.
And you want to get things done.
Right. Yes. I very much like to tick things off the to-do list, you know. So.
And that's not necessarily black and white, but that's effective. And that's being action-oriented.
Right, yeah.
And action sometimes is more ambiguous than our thoughts about action.
Yeah. And yeah, just so different beliefs that I've had, I think probably used to be as a theme more black and white. Mm-hmm. But now I'm much more just, yeah, I think my life experiences, you know, professional, personal, have just kind of made me more like, you know, everybody need something different, and everybody's situation, you know, working with social programs and stuff, it just kind of makes you reflect on this kind of mm-hmm. stuff, you know.
And seeing, I would imagine, seeing those applicants who don't make it,
mm-hmm.
who are just perfectly wonderful people, but they just don't fit the criteria.
Yeah.
And that's arbitrary on the one hand, but it's actually what the program needs to mm-hmm. function on the other hand. And you sit right in that ambiguity.
Yeah, and the sociology student in me wants to look at it more systematically too sometimes, like, because another issue that I get really fired up about is the education system. So when I see how it comes into play with like all this student debt, you know, just to look at the bigger picture of that, you know, you have all these working poor who have student loans and crippling student loans.
Right.
And they, in a lot of cases, never even got the degree.
Right.
Because I don't know what the numbers are like now, but I remember when I was in college, the rate of people that went to college was only about like 1/3 of graduating, mm-hmm. you know, kids coming out of high school were going to college, and only like 1/3 of those were graduating. But a lot, because it's pushed so hard in our society as like the thing to do, a lot of kids matriculate who maybe shouldn't necessarily go to college, or maybe it's not the best idea, you know, and
or they're not going to finish,
or they can't afford it, or what have you.
It wouldn't be bad for them if they could actually afford it,
financing mechanism. Yeah, so they end up with or without a degree. In unfortunately many cases not a degree, but all the debt, and mm-hmm. there's no going back on that. You can't call bankruptcy on it. There is no shedding that debt. And it breaks my heart to see how many applicants, because I've worked in a few different means-tested programs where we're looking at credit reports and we're pulling financial information, and so many people who are, you know, on the lower income end, and they're working jobs that do not require a college education, shouldn't, you know, if they are, they shouldn't require a college education. They're not making very much. And they're earning, you know, capacity that, you know, there isn't going to be huge probably. And yet they're saddled with this debt for life. And it follows you around everywhere you go. And they become collections for so many people, which then mars people's credit reports for a long time, making them unable to do something like buy property.
Right.
So,
right.
And a lot of the programs for home ownership assistance, you know, they still require a pretty clean credit report.
Yeah, no.
Even Habitat.
Right.
Yeah. You know? So, because you are still lending them a mortgage, so you have to take it into consideration. So it's just hard to do.
You know, credit for millennia has been an issue.
I bet.
And you can go back and you can study it in the ancient Middle East. In biblical times, it has always been an issue.
Yeah. Keep people down.
Right. And there's, you know, one translation of in Christianity, the Lord's Prayer is "Forgive us our debts, mm-hmm. as we forgive our debtors." That's literally what it says in the Greek.
Yeah.
And so that's how core the issues of indebtedness was and credit was back in those days.
Yeah.
The teachings were pretty detailed.
Yeah.
Let's shift gears because we're coming down to the end of the hour. Mm. What do you do on a daily basis, weekly basis, monthly basis, or, you know, every year or so mm-hmm. to take care of yourself emotionally, physically, intellectually? And how do you know you need to do that?
Right before I lose it.
That's what most people say.
I let it run down right to the quick. It's been very hard for me to schedule. Let's put it that way.
There are two styles when I ask this. One are the schedulers, mm-hmm. and the others are those who just try to sense it a little bit earlier.
Yeah.
Both methods work.
Right. So, I mean, I know that to keep my sanity, I have to try to have a few hours anyway, just out of the house, away from kids, mm-hmm. like probably on a weekly basis, you know, be great if it was more, but it's not. But I work 2 days a week too, so it's a decent balance. But yeah, I think at least once a week for like a few hours, I just need to out of that fray for a little bit. Yeah, and I don't do it probably as much as I should, but, you know, definitely doing that. And then, you know, I'll end up having massage like once a year, but mm-hmm. I tell myself it should be more. But yeah, just kind of taking time to myself anymore is just such a luxury since I got married and had kids, and it's just, you know, it's something I used to take so for granted, but just having a little alone time, because I'm a real introvert too, so it's like I just need to recharge. Right. So anything really, grocery shopping, like just going for a hike, you know, just take the dog for a walk, a long one, right. You know, something to just clear my head a little bit. So
Yeah, with young children, your life is very full, both emotionally and you're physically often exhausted, and intellectually, you're keeping lots of lists.
Yeah, it's basically a constant, what do I need to do next? And you're constantly making it like diaper, milk, you know, pack her bag for tomorrow, you know, that's a spill. You're looking at different messes thinking like, what's the highest priority? he's going through for the dog dish, you know.
And the good news is that it will end, and you will miss pieces of it, and it will have shown you, like you said, that there were things about your children that horrify you in terms of making you be a parent or reflect you more than you want to. But there are also things in you that they bring out that are really powerful.
Yeah, for sure.
Liz, it's been good to get to know you.
You too. Thanks for having me.
And
it was fun.
You're going to, this is Ray LaMontagne. You are the best thing to close with.
Yeah.
And do you want to say why you picked that?
So that one is just another song that I really like right now. It's not super old. It's not as old as Paul Simon.
Sure.
But yeah, it's a song I've just liked recently. It's
Sweet.
A good one. So.
Okay.
Yeah, anyway.
Here we go.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Ain't been going my way, you know I need you. way you move me, it's crazy. It's like you see right through me and make it easier. You please me, you don't even have to try. You believe me when I say this love will never fade away.
You're listening to WRFI Watkins Glen, Ithaca, 88.1 in Ithaca and 91.9 in Watkins Glen.